Welcome to the Destination Begin podcast. I'm your host, Kristen Smith. I've lost over 250 pounds. I've started my life over multiple times and managed to find humor, lessons, and joy in the process. And now I'm here, sharing those stories with you. Thanks for joining me.
Hi, welcome to the podcast. My voice sounds a little bit raspy again. I apologize. It's windy here in Miami Beach, and I spend a lot of my time on the beach running Fit Camp, and I have to yell. And so today I'm extra crackly because it was really, really windy. And then we have a lot of people who come to our class who like each other, which is amazing. The community is phenomenal, but sometimes they come to class and then they talk the whole entire time and I have to yell extra loud so that I can be heard. And so that was the day. That was how it was today. In fact, I got a little cantankerous. I was like, you guys, you know, shh. There are people around you who don't want to hear your recipe sharing and where you went this weekend. Anyway, I had to become a little bit like their mom. But all that to say, that's why I'm raspy. And it's not as bad. I don't know if you ever saw the Friends episode where Phoebe had a cold and she had a super sexy voice and then she got better and she was trying to get a cold again by sticking her head out the window with her hair wet and stuff because she missed her sexy voice. Yeah, that's, I can get a sexy voice just by running one class. So also, did you know that by getting your head wet and walking out in the cold, it doesn't make you sick? People are like, don't go out with a wet hair. You're going to get sick. No, you get sick from a weakened immune system and germs and viruses and bacteria. You don't get sick from having a wet hair. It's very funny to me. At least I think that's true. I read it somewhere. Anyway, I've been podcasting every week now for a little while, so I feel like when I hop on here to kind of update you on my life, there's not a lot of new stuff, but I have a few things. Yesterday, a few of us went to Axe Habits, which is an axe throwing place in Miami. I had heard that these places are popular and it's a lot of fun to go and throw an axe at a bullseye target. And so we got to talking about it at boot camp one time and someone's like, let's go do it. I said, okay, I'm going to book it. So I booked it and only a few people actually ended up going. So I was thinking, oh, maybe this is going to be stupid. Maybe everybody knows it's actually dumb. It was so fun. It's set up kind of like, you know, it's like a big bullseye on a big wooden wall. And it's a like a chain link fence cage with two lanes and they like you line up. You put this axe over your head and you throw it end over end and you try to get it to hit the bullseye on the wood. And the guy, this was so delightful to me. This guy was assigned to our group to teach us the safety rules and, you know, teach us how to throw the axe properly. And his title was our personal expert. I'm like, that is the greatest. He was our expert. And I was like, I just want to hang out and find all of the plays on words with the word axe. But anyway, he showed us how to properly throw the axe, which just basically involves holding it correctly, lining your feet up, taking one big step, and then just letting it go. And then it goes end over end. And if you're lucky, it stops rotating with the blade in the wall. It was really fun. And it was something that, you know, the axe isn't heavy, so anybody can do it. It was $40 a person for 90 minutes. So, I mean, it was a little more than I like to spend on entertainment because I'm cheap. But all I was thinking about was like, this place is making bank because there were five of us. So they made, I can't do math. They made $200 just to have us in the building. And what we did cost them nothing. You know, obviously they have insurance and rent and stuff. But I've heard that this is a very lucrative business. So if you want to start a business, this is a great one. Anyway, it was really fun. If you have a chance to do it, I encourage you to. It's fun. It's not like physically taxing. It's less annoying than darts. And it's easier than bowling, I think. Bowling is an exercise in frustration for me, and I always end up getting a little crick in my side and a broken fingernail, and this was just so much easier. Anyway, that was really fun. What else? Just a lot of, last week I thought that I got sick because, Roy was gone and then he came home and apparently I was just so exhausted from having to do everything in my life without him helping me. That Tuesday I basically slept until 3 p.m. I crashed so hard, and that is very rare for me to have the time. I happened to have a clear schedule and I could just crash like that. Or was it Wednesday? It was Wednesday. And I just had a massive raging headache. So I had 2 days where I basically slept and then I was fine. Got up on Friday, ran 10 miles, felt great all weekend. So I'm super glad I wasn't sick. I don't know what was going on, but it wasn't pleasant. And, you know, I always say, if you don't rest on purpose, your body will take rest and insist on it. And that was my body saying, hey, idiot, practice what you preach. So anyway, I started writing my memoir. I started writing every single morning, and that has become such an interesting experience. It's the 15th of January. I now have 15 massive documents that I have written. I shouldn't say massive. Some of them aren't quite as large, but I get up early. I pour my coffee. I sit here in my office. It's nice and cozy, and some days I've read and meditated and then wrote. Some days I've written the minute I wake up. It just depends. But what comes out is just interesting. And it's been this strange experience of writing and it just flowing. Most days I just type and I type. Luckily, I'm a fast typer. Type and type and type. And then I get up, I go work out, I go do my day, and I'll come back, sit down and read what I wrote. And it's like, I don't remember writing it. It doesn't sound like, I mean, I feel like I'm reading someone else's writing. It's so weird. It's like there's a version of me that is accessible in the wee hours of the morning that I don't know that I couldn't write that way this time of day. I've not ever tried, I guess. But it's fascinating. And also kind of like, well, if I'm going to write my memoir, do I write it early in the morning or do I sit down and write in the afternoon? Because in the morning, it's not, I mean, I'm not getting very far on writing the story of my life because other things come out, things from my heart and soul. Or I'll read, I'm reading A Course in Miracles and I'm trying to finish absorbing all of that and then doing all of the lessons. And it's so deep and it's so, like, I read a little bit and I've got so much to chew on. And then I'll write and it just becomes a rant or a soul cry or something that is not what I would have imagined I had to say. Or I'll meditate and I'll get these really deep visions and then I'll write. And so when I sit down to write, you know, I was born in Minneapolis, Minnesota to Alan and Barbara Bow. Like, that doesn't flow quite as well yet. But I think that there's going to be a process and a flow here that develops. I'm only 15 days into my commitment to write every day. So we'll see what this turns into. But what I did do is I started a Substack account. So the new blog is actually called a Substack. Apparently, I was told this. I don't know. I found all my old blogs that I used to have when I wrote blogs way back when. I haven't written a blog in a long time. I write some blog posts for my websites that I don't know that anybody knows how to find, nor have I advertised them. But Substack.com, you can write a blog and then people subscribe to it. And then you can have paid subscriptions. So all of these have a paid aspect, which mine is set up to have one. But you basically, you just say, well, no, this is going to anybody who finds it. But if you'd like to follow me on that, it's the Kristen's experience.substack.com. And so I'm going to be posting there. I don't really know exactly everything I'm going to be posting there, but what has started to happen just thus far is I sit down, I write this flow, and then I go onto Substack and I write about the experience of writing, which sounds really redundant, but it's almost like one is flowing and one is me actually trying to talk about writing. So for example, this morning, I started to write my memoir. I'm like, all right, I got to dig into this. I need to start writing the story of my life. So I started writing about my parents, which is where I'm still kind of in the very beginning of, you know, to tell my story, I have to start by telling a little bit about my parents. But when I start that, I find I have more questions than I have information, and I keep getting pulled into these incredibly emotional, empathetic experiences, and it bowls me over. And today was the second time that I found myself completely consumed, overwhelmed with, overwrought by emotion to where I could barely contain it. I could barely sit here. I don't even know what to say. But so then to sit down then and write in my Substack what I just went through and what I just realized is kind of like the therapy for me after sitting here and writing. It's just crazy. It's like birthing something out of my gut and then writing about what the birthing experience was. But the first day that this happened, I was writing about my dad because it was his birthday and I wanted to write something about my dad. And so I just sat down with a stream of consciousness. I never intended anybody to read it. Like, I'm writing these things so far without the intention of doing anything with this, just to get in the habit of writing. And so I'm writing about my dad and just kind of flowed into stories from my childhood. And I was just seeing memories and kind of living those memories and just writing them. And I came to this part where, you know, my parents didn't make much money. My dad would get cars and fix them up. And we would always have an old used car that was kind of maybe on its last legs. At least when I was a kid, I know before I came around, there was more resources. But so I was talking about that in this thing, you know, daddy would fix the cars and he found this one car that we had, I remember was really, really bad. I don't know why it was chosen as the car to drive, because we always had a spare sitting on the side of the driveway that didn't quite work, but could be fixed. I don't know. And I was describing how this car was like a kind of a jalopy and it was really rusty. And I remember you could see, there's a little hole in the floorboard in the back seat. You could see through like to the ground, like there's a little hole. And I remember we get in the car to go to church and we get in that car to go to school. We had a church school for a long time. And we lived 30 miles from our church. And when I was real little and we went to that school, you know, it was 5 days a week getting in the car in the morning and driving to school and back. And then on Sundays and sometimes Saturday nights, driving back up there to church. Thursday nights, we had Bible studies, so we'd go to school, come home, go right back. So there's a lot of time in the car. And I just remember it, you know, it's Minnesota, winter. We'd get up to go to school. We'd get in the back seat. It wouldn't matter how long the car would run. It wasn't warm when we got in it. And I don't even know if my mom necessarily warmed it up for a long time anyway. I know, like, saving gas money. I don't remember. But I just remember we'd get in the back seat. My mom had a blanket for my sister and I to huddle under. My brother is older, so he was a tough, you know, man of the car. Sit in the front seat. My mom would get in the car, and she'd always put a little towel under the gas pedal to protect the back heel of her shoe, because it was, like, crappy, you know, terrible, awful floorboards, carpet gone. And then she'd turn the key and try to start the car. And I just remembered that experience of my mom turning the key and waiting for it to turn over. And she'd, you know, be feathering the gas pedal, giving it gas and trying not to flood it and cranking the engine. And she would pray, "Dear Lord, let this car start in the name of Jesus, in the name of Jesus." And she would be turning that car key. And I just had this, it's so emotional. I've never thought about this until the other day, of just all of a sudden I'm sitting in my mother's body and imagining what was that like to be trying to start your car. It's freezing cold, trying to get the car to start. You got to get to school. You've got three kids in the car. And then now you've got to drive 30 miles in this old car in the cold. You're praying it starts. Then it starts. Thank you, Jesus. Relief. And then my mom would pray, "Send your angels to go with us on the road to protect us." She'd always pray before she'd pull that car out of the driveway. And it was just habit, right? This is my life. I didn't think about it. We prayed before dinner. We prayed before bed. We prayed when we got in the car. We just prayed all the time. But I never had a moment where I was feeling that empathy of what that must have been like for her. And I stopped writing and I wept. I just wept with this, I don't know what, but just emotion of my mother and what she did for us, to take care of us, to run the household of our life. You know, my parents were so dedicated and principled, and we were raised in this church, and I call it cult church. It was turned into this cult, and like I have my story about my life being raised there. But to look at my parents, of their fervor, their dedication, their belief so strongly in this life, and to be making these sacrifices and living on this faith. And you can say whatever you want. I can say, heaven knows I've said it on this podcast a billion times. Heaven knows I've said it in conversation, and my siblings and I have held our parents' feet to the fire for all the mistakes that we in our high and mighty moments in hindsight can say. But in those moments, here are people who believe so passionately that they were doing the best and right thing, to trust that God was going to figure it all out as long as they put one foot in front of the other. It's beautiful. And it's so strong. And I'm so grateful. And I just look at my mom, especially sitting here where we are all fine, we all survived, to say, what power in that moment, in that faith, in that determination to continue one day after the other to show up. That's hard. I've never had to do anything that hard. I set about to write my story of how hard I had it and how much I've overcome. And I go to the very beginning. I haven't started talking about anything I've done. And here's my mother. And I can see all the things she's done. And I'm like, whoa, what? Maybe that's the story. I don't know. But that is the story. I sat in that and just wept in gratitude and awe and love for my mother. And I was writing about my dad. It's like, if this is the path I have started down, it's going to be a very long and emotional path of this whole thing. And I'm here for it, man. I have never been more excited to wake up in the morning than I am now, knowing that the first thing I'm going to do is sit down and go to these places and pull these memories up and write. And I don't know where it all is going to lead, but that emotion was just, it was powerful. And then, of course, I wrote about my dad, and, you know, just tears falling down my face, and so connected with love, so connected with my parents. It's almost like I feel like I can go back in time and be there. And the gift of being able to put that into words and put that into black letters on a screen, it's going to be an amazing journey. So anyway, rabbit trails. So this morning, I was trying to go back there because I haven't gotten very far. When I start writing the history of my parents, I end up with a lot of questions too. I have a long list of questions I need to ask them because I got to get information. I don't know a lot of this stuff. But this morning, I was starting kind of going back there, and I got on a rabbit trail thinking about my mom and her story and just trying to at least just get it going. I got to move on here. You know, my parents were married. They moved to Minneapolis. My parents got married. They immediately got pregnant with my brother. They were living in the apartment in the basement of the church that they had just recently found. And then all of a sudden I got this image of like, my mother is newly married, pregnant with her first baby. This is a very exciting period of time in life. And they're living in the basement of a church. So they're having a nursery for their first baby in an apartment in a church. Like, what? How did that feel? And then I remembered, oh yeah, a few weeks before my brother was born, so my mother is gonna have a baby anytime. This is so exciting. My mother's mother, my grandma Mildred, suddenly got ill and died at 53. So now I'm like, my mother, pregnant with her mother's first grandbaby, loses her mother. And then has to go give birth to this baby and cope with the grief of having lost her mother and the joy of having her baby, but also the grief of my mother isn't here for this. And then my dad, how does my dad process this? Here's my wife having my first son. She's grieving. I'm grieving. How do we navigate this? They didn't freaking know how to navigate that. Who knows how to navigate that? And I just was overwhelmed with this feeling of, well, then my grandma Mildred, she's living down in Superior, Iowa. Her oldest daughter moves far away and is going to have her first grandbaby far away. This is great, but she's so far away. And before she gets to hold her first grandbaby, she passes away. What? Then I think about my grandma Mildred's life living on the farm. She had her first baby was stillborn. My aunt Marlene, how horrible to have a baby stillborn. 7 years later, she had my mother. A couple years later, had my Aunt Donna. My Aunt Donna has horrible asthma. My Aunt Donna nearly died many, many times. And then my Aunt Donna got polio. And so my Grandma Mildred, living on the farm, a hard life, two little girls, one of them nearly dies over and over again, gets polio, and their life is spent getting braces for my Aunt Donna, teaching her how to walk, dealing with horrible people back then who didn't understand how rude it was and terrible to stare and say terrible things to a little girl with braces on her legs. These are the stories of the women in my family that I'm thinking about before I sit down to write my story, which is like I was homeschooled and I was lonely. Right? My problems are all of a sudden like, I am nothing. I've been through nothing. I'm never mind. Like, that's how it makes me feel. My story, my sufferings, so insignificant. Maybe if I had spent more time in my childhood understanding that other people in my immediate family had been through a lot of terrible things, I wouldn't have been so emo, right? This is how easy it is for me now to just think of myself as a terrible, awful person with no empathy and who's a victim. And I really should shut up and tell the story of the women in my family who actually endured and overcame and are phenomenal. But here's the thing, like I know many of you would say, Kristen, no, we all know this. Pain is relative. Everyone's story is significant. And if one person can overcome, that means it's possible for all of us to overcome. And all of our stories have power. All of our stories have merit. And I'm so proud of myself for overcoming what I've overcome. But what I see now is I come from a legacy of strong, powerful women who have faced life on life's terms and who have risen and have stood up every day with faith, with determination, understanding this isn't about me. This isn't me, a victim. This is the hand life has given me, and I'm going to take it, and I'm going to create something out of it. And I'm just sitting here this morning, overcome with grief, thinking about my mother losing her mother, overcome with grief, thinking about my grandmother losing her first child, and thinking, how am I going to bear walking through the history of my family? I mean, much less I get to relive all of the stuff I did too. Hoof, hoof-de-doo. This is going to be interesting. What's my point? I don't know. I'm just telling you what I'm going through. And it's awesome. I'm so excited. And I've learned so much in the past couple of weeks about my family without having even talked to any of them. But just the beauty of my soul remembering and being able to identify with, it's a gift, and I'm so in love with this process. And it's gonna be hard. I keep saying this, so I don't know if I said it on the podcast, but I saw an interview with Brooke Shields because she wrote her memoir. This was years ago, and she said, I wrote my memoir and I went into a deep depression, and it took me a long time to come out of it. And I remember thinking that was such a weird and curious thing to say. But then when I originally started writing my story like 7 years ago, and I wrote one little anecdote, and it was so emotionally traumatizing to me. I said, oh no, I can never write my story. I could never handle it. And all of a sudden I got it. Like, I do not want to relive the pieces of my life that I feel were traumatic. I don't want to relive trauma. Who does? But I feel like now, not only am I ready, I'm willing. And perhaps the perspective has been shifted enough in my heart and soul that it won't be the experience that it would have been. In fact, I feel convinced that that's the case. But I think the moral of the story I'm saying here is like the realization our parents are people. Do we really think our parents tried to hurt anyone? You know, I for a long time had this narrative like my parents should have known better. And oh my goodness, they chose not to do better. And it's like such garbage. Do we really think our parents had us as children and then we're like, how can we hurt them today? Like, no. Human beings, I don't think that anybody sets out to spend their life trying to hurt anybody. I just don't. I just don't. Even people who hurt people really badly, they're not trying to hurt that person. There's something else going on. Maybe they were so wrapped up in their survival. I know my parents were so wrapped up in survival and their own narrative of making life work. How could they sit back and go, I wonder how Kristen's emotional well-being is on this Tuesday afternoon in this, you know, home of ours. You know, the biggest hierarchy of needs there was survival, food on the table, paying the rent, and making sure that their mission of saving our souls, which they believed was so incredibly important to do in the way they were doing, that was the important thing. Did it all turn out perfectly in the moment? Of course not. Like, a lot of things were really screwed up. But I'm still standing. They're still standing. Us three kids are still standing. We may have scars and all these things, but we are standing here. We are successful. We have a 100% track record for having made it through all the things. All of us. My parents, the things that they went through, their parents, we're here. We are here. Our souls are intact. They were never broken. Our perspectives and our minds and our nervous systems, yes, they have been impacted by the life story that we all led. But we are still standing. You are still standing. You may have scars. You may have a lot of things in life you've had to deal with and overcome because of the decisions of your parents or their parents. But did you make it? Are you still standing? And if your answer is yes, then okay. Then there's redemption. Then there's power there. I think we can all connect to our past in a powerful, triumphant, positive way if we're willing. Now, I was not willing not too long ago. So I'm not sitting here telling you, you must be willing. I think that when the student is ready, the teacher appears. And that's been my case. I want to encourage you though, if your parents are still living, find out what kind of people they were then. Imagine having been them. Walk a day in some of the stories they've told you. I am embarrassed that I'm 45 years old and I've never done this. That I've never tried to be empathetic to my parents' perspective. It's embarrassing. And I aim to fix that now by living it and writing the book about it. And then writing the Substack about my experience about it. I was really, really down this morning thinking like, I don't have a right to tell my story because it's nothing compared to what my Aunt Donna, my mom, and my grandma Mildred went through. But as the day went on and I had a time to chew on this, I arrived at that conclusion that no, all of our stories are valid. My story is valid. I indeed overcame. I indeed have persevered, and I can be very proud of the things I've overcome. And now I just know that I get to credit a lot of that to the women from whence I came. Anyway, all right, enough about that. A couple other little notes before we dig into the meat and potatoes of the episode. If you want to subscribe to the Substack, by the way, thekristenexperience.substack.com, it's free. It will say, do you want the paid version or the free version? The free version is what I'm doing. Maybe someday when I'm really famous I've always wanted to have some kind of avenue where I could write certain veins of topics that I talk about with some of my friends, but I would never put on this podcast and I would never put somewhere where everybody could find it. But a paid subscription, I could actually start talking about some of those things, which would be so much fun. Like, if I were to have the podcast that I really want to have about some of these things, it would be called Kristen After Dark. And you can guess what those topics would be. Hence why it doesn't exist. Not until everyone who's ever known me is like, I don't know, deaf or has no access to the internet, or for sure after my parents pass away in like 50 years. But anyway, maybe I'll do that. We'll see. If you're interested in that, let me know. Kristen at thekristenexperience.com. I've been getting a lot of signups for the retreat that I'm doing. We have one spot left. So exciting. So a bunch of you in podcast land are coming. I'm so excited to meet you. Crystal and Ashley and I don't remember everyone else. Renat, Alicia. Some of my college girlfriends are going. Some of our boot campers are going. It's super exciting. So, and then some people that are connected to Jessica, the yoga teacher and facilitator of this retreat too. So we have one spot left. If you want to go, you have to jump on this because it will be full. which is amazing. It's May 23rd to 27th in Colorado, flying into Denver, staying in Estes Park. It's so beautiful. So it's been such a massive success and filled up so fast that it's time already to say we're doing this again. So Costa Rica, August 13th to the 18th. Same type of thing, self-love workshops, hikes. There's going to be some water experiences. So kayaking, there's beautiful waterfalls. There'll be yoga, there'll be boot camp, there'll be some running. So very active and also meditative and relaxing and adventure. So if you're interested in a retreat with me and Roy and Jessica, which I know most of you don't know Jessica, but she's phenomenal. You can take my word for it. August 13th to the 18th in Costa Rica. You need to message me if you're interested because we don't have all the details out. We don't have a payment link or anything, but we will. So excited about that. And then one other thing in the commercial part of this podcast. I talk a lot about protein and protein powders and supplements. And I used to be a part of First Form. I used to rep their products. I don't rep their products anymore for a long list of reasons. I don't associate with their brand or their company anymore for a long list of reasons. If you do, that's awesome. But the number one thing with protein with me is I'm not a big fan of whey protein. Whey protein messes up my system. And so I've gone long periods of time in the last year of having no protein supplements at all. And then once in a while, I go back and forth. The Ninja Creamy makes me need to have protein shakes because I love the Ninja Creamy. But anyway, and so I have gone back and forth with protein powders, and I always recommend you get your protein from real food. It's the ideal thing. Obviously, our bodies know what to do with real food. It's the ideal. But protein shakes are a really handy tool for hitting a protein goal, for making sure that you're getting your protein needs met. And there are a lot of great brands that are very clean. They don't have a lot of garbage, but most of them have a lot of garbage. So anyway, all that to say, I found a grass-fed beef isolate powder last year that I loved. And then they went out of business because they couldn't get enough product because it has to be sourced outside of the US because it's hard to find really high-quality grass-fed beef in the US because the US sucks when it comes to food quality and the regulations. But Equip Foods is a brand I just found. They have a grass-fed beef isolate powder. So, okay, this protein powder does not taste like meat. It's, I don't even know how they do it, but basically, let's see. It's, I am reading the bag. Anyway, the bottom line, it's grass-fed beef protein. It contains collagen and gelatin, and it's got a complete source of protein. So a lot of collagens are not a complete protein, but this one is. And it's delicious and they're clean. There's no whey, there's no gluten, there's no artificial anything. I just dropped it on the floor and it's sweetened with just stevia. So I now am partnered with them and I'm really excited because A, I get a discount and I'm using this stuff, and B, I can offer you a discount. So it's Equip, E-Q-U-I-P, foods.com. You can take a look at their line of products. They also have pre-workouts. They have colostrum, which I haven't dabbled into yet, but I'm going to be ordering some and finding out all of the nutritional benefits of colostrum. But if you like protein powder, this stuff is super creamy. It's delicious. It's 100 calories for a scoop. And the only ingredients are beef collagen protein, sea salt, and stevia leaf extract. So super clean, really good. The code THEKRISTENEXPERIENCE gets you 15% off, so you can try it. I highly recommend it. End of commercial. Today I was training some ladies in the park, and I saw a lot of people walking their dogs. I see this all the time. I live on the boardwalk. The park is right by the boardwalk and there's just tons of dogs, and it's super fun. I am so lucky that part of my day is spent standing out there in that park, training people, watching people walk by with their pets, with their kids in the sunshine and the breeze. It's amazing. I'm so lucky. And so this morning I'm training these ladies. It's a group of ladies from New York. It's funny because they all live in the same town in New York. They all spend a portion of their winter here in Miami within a block or two of each other. These five women, all of them are married to men whose name is Mike, which is funny. But they're all women. Most of them are 60 or a little above. I think they're between like maybe 55 and 62. But they're young looking. They're high energy. They're phenomenal, amazing, powerful women. And they're all in great shape. And I get to train them. So I was training them this morning and they were all doing a sumo squat into a sumo deadlift high pull. So sumo deadlift and then elbows to ears, pulling up these dumbbells. And their shoulders are just beautiful, like lean, muscular. None of them are like bulky. They're all trim, lean, but they all have great muscle tone. They look phenomenal. And as a trainer, you know, I love seeing good muscles. I love muscles. I love my muscles. And I just said, you ladies, I wish you could. In fact, I had them stand so I could take a picture. I'm like, I have to take a picture of your ladies. Your shoulders all look so phenomenal. And I'm not just blowing smoke up your butt. I know how hard you work. You work right here with me. And I know outside of seeing me, they also work out when they're not with me. And I was like, you ladies should be so proud. They start their day every day taking care of their bodies. An hour a day. They said, well, this is the fruit of consistent exercise our whole lives. These women have been exercising every day for their whole lives. So they have great posture. They have great balance. They have great stamina. They have great endurance. They have beautiful muscle tone. They don't have excess body fat. They just do it. They don't complain about it. They don't whine about it. They're not on the track or off the track. This is their life. And the benefit is they all have healthy, beautiful muscles and they have healthy bodies. And I wanted to be like, could you just stand on a tall, tall pedestal and just say, ladies, people, spend an hour a day, every single day when you get up and exercise. Like this is truth. Every single day we should be doing exactly what these ladies do. And I know what people say, oh, it must be nice when you have money and you have time, but I have kids. These women all raised children and raised families, and they did it then too. Every single human being who is alive, you can make the time to take care of your body. The end. The end. I reject every single argument that you have, every excuse you have. I throw up my hand. Yes, you can. You can take an hour of your day to take care of your body. If the most you do is walk for 1 hour, that is fine. But do not tell me that you do not have 1 hour to take care of your body. Okay, I'm hopping off the soapbox. And if you do, the result is that you are healthy and that you are strong, or at least stronger than if you do nothing. But if you're willing to take an hour and just accept, you know what, for the rest of my life, I got to take an hour of my day and I need to move my body. And if you have excess fat on your body right now, you're going to have to do a little extra to get rid of it. And then once you're rid of it, you're going to have to continue to do that exercise for the rest of your life. These women are not like, oh, well, I lost all of the excess weight from having babies and now I can just do whatever I want. No, the healthy lifestyle, what you have to do to lose fat is what you have to keep doing to keep it off. It's the way it is. Anyway, that was a long little diatribe, but I get really passionate about this because as a trainer, one of my jobs is I listen to a billion trillion excuses. Why I got off track, why I can't do it, what happened last weekend, oh my goodness, this, that, the other. And I say, yes, I understand, life is difficult. However, there's a giant pile of people who no matter how busy they are, where they are, they exercise an hour a day, the end. And you can do that. There's no superpower needed. It's not easy for them either. It's not always easy for them either. It's not easy for anyone all the time. But when you decide, I don't care how tired I am or in what kind of hurry I am, I'm going to brush my teeth, I'm going to put clothes on, I'm going to make sure I pay my taxes, we can do these things. Anyway, okay. Hi. Okay. Happy, easy Kristen here. The excuse machine absorbing Kristen gets tired of excuses and I want more for you. Anyway, so I'm down in the park and I'm standing there while the ladies are doing their movements and I'm looking around and I see all these dogs on a leash and I just had this cute little guy, this little fluffy dog just bouncing. He was just so happy to be out on his walk and he was a little fluffy guy, kind of like Gus, and he was trot, 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 trot. And there was slack on the leash. There was no pulling. He was walking right next to his human. Happy, happy, happy. And I just thought, it's just so sad. that doggy has to be on a leash. You know, that dog's whole life will just be on a leash and never can go where it wants. But as I was watching it walk past, I was like, that dog is exactly where he wants to be. He's on a boardwalk, he's on a walk, and he's with his human. That leash is protecting that dog because around the corner, here comes bikers, people on rollerblades, other dogs. They allow cats to live here in the mangrove. So there's wild cats out there. Like, seriously, like they look like house cats. If you go out on the boardwalk here, it's full of cats, like tons of them. Like, it's crazy. Anyway, so it's like that leash is actually the greatest part of that dog's life because that dog is where the dog wants to be. And that leash is safety. The owner, obviously, like has that dog on a leash to keep the dog safe, to keep the dog from getting into trouble, getting attacked, getting hit, whatever. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is the perspective that I have needed to suss out in my own head to reconcile a lot of the seeming contradictions that are out here in diet culture and in healthy lifestyle world and in my experience. I am always transparent here as much as I possibly can be, while being careful not to give some of you excuses, because this is what happens. Like, oh, I was doing this thing, but I was listening to a podcast and she's lost all this weight and she doesn't do that. So I realized, oh, maybe I don't have to do that. So I don't want to give people excuses. So I am careful about some of the things that I share. I don't always share when I fall on my face because I want you as listeners to know that you don't have to fall on your face. And it's not normal to just fall on your face all of the time. I don't want that idea out there. But I do admit here, like, I fall on my face. I fall into bags of Cheetos and I gain weight and have to take it back off. And I find peace with food. And then I lose peace with food. And I make one decision that throws me back into, I've got to start over in this area. I have to do the work for the rest of my life. And I get confused myself on my path forward sometimes because I've done all the things. I had, you know, I was obese. I lost lots of weight. I've done CrossFit. I've done running. I've done F45. I had weight loss surgery. I regained weight. I went paleo. I've done everything. And I know the periods of time when I've had the most peace about my food habits, my food behaviors, and food. I know when it's gotten unhealthy, and I know everything in between. And so I'm always looking for the answer for me forever. I would love to figure out what is the way that I'm going to eat until I die so I never have to think about this. This is what we all want, to just not have to think about it. But the fact of the matter is we all always have to think about it, just like we all always have to think about our budget and paying our rent and saving for retirement and making sure we have a healthy income stream that's healthy relative to our expense stream. We can't just say this is figured out, I never have to think about it. Our bodies are dynamic. The times of our life are dynamic. And so I struggle because I still want that one thing just like everybody else. And the only way to the one thing, the one constant is the ability to stay nimble and to learn and adjust, because what works for me for a period of time may not be sustainable forever. It may be sustainable in part forever, but some things don't serve. Like, for example, right now I'm training for a marathon. I'm running a marathon in 2 weeks. I cannot be in a hyper calorie deficit to lose the 10 pounds I want to lose off my body when I have all of this running to do. You might say, oh, well, you're running, you should drop weight. Well, do you know how hungry a person gets after a 20 mile run? I'll run 20 miles on Wednesday, and on Thursday, I will feel like I need to eat my arm. I cannot eat 1,600 calories on Thursday and have energy to teach my fit camp classes, train my clients, get all of those things done. I have to be nimble because I signed up for a marathon, and that is still hard for me because I want to just apply the same thing all the time. And there's ideas that are put out there by your favorite Instagram influencer and your favorite fitness instructor and your favorite healthy living person and Martha Stewart and, you know, celebrities and all of the advertisements on TV. And it's all conflicting if you put it all in one pile. And so what has to happen? You have to pay attention to your own dangers, the things that are dangerous to you, that little dog on the path. There were things dangerous to that little fluffy ball of fur that were not dangerous to the human holding the leash and that were not dangerous to some of the other dogs. That little dog needed to be protected from giant bike tires and little cats that were the same size of that dog. There were certain threats to that little dog that that leash was protecting that dog from. And that same leash, tiny little leash, would do nothing for a giant dog. And meanwhile, a giant dog's leash would be way too much for that little dog. You see what I'm saying? We all need a leash to protect us from things that can come up to deter us from us enjoying the walk, enjoying the journey, enjoying our life, and having the experience that we want. But depending on where we are and depending on who we are, that leash might look a little different. And so I realized again that my leash, I have to be on a leash, and that's not restrictive, and that's not diet culture, and that's not, you know, mental illness, like a lot of these influencers will say that are against diet. So you can't, diet culture is so bad and it's obsessive. And I have friends in the health space that get on their Instagram and get on the internet and they blast the things that I teach. And I bristle. I get really upset about it because I'm like, listen, I love you, but you need to understand that your messaging does not work for everyone. And I need to understand that my messaging doesn't work for everyone. Hence why there's so many of us. But this is what I've learned for me. And this hit home today so much. I'm going to share this with you. I need a leash. Without a leash, my old habits, the decades that I lived of no structure and eating with my emotions and all of those old patterns of comfort and ease, they will rise up. Those grooves are not gone from my brain. Now, the needle doesn't fall in those grooves very often, but I have to make sure that I stay far away from them and I have to have a leash. When I was in bodybuilding, I loved how quickly I lost weight. I loved how shredded I looked. I loved the fact that everything fit me and I was super skinny and I was super lean. I miss looking like that. And guess what? Looking like that is not sustainable, nor is it healthy. I need a leash that keeps me from ever going back to that arena. That was a period of time. That was a specific goal. I'm glad I did it. I did one too many. And I can never do that again. And without a leash, without a guideline of saying like, I can never eat below this number of calories and I can never take those certain supplements again, that keeps me safe from going back to those old habits of getting my value off of the number on the scale, of getting my value on how shredded I was, on assessing my ability to be healthy on how much muscle I have, way to the extreme. So I have to have a leash. It keeps me safe from both extremes. But if you don't like the leash analogy, I was thinking about a car on a road. I got to have guardrails on either side of me so that I can safely get to where I'm going. Where I'm going now is I want to live a really long life in a healthy body that does everything I ask of it. I don't want excess fat to slow me down and hurt my health. And I don't want too little healthy tissue that ruins my hormones again. So that's where I'm going. And I need guardrails on either side of me. That means structure. That means there are foods that I never eat. There are foods I eat rarely. There are foods I need to eat in moderation and foods that I need to eat en masse. I know what those things are. And instead of trying so hard to say, no, I shouldn't have those boundaries. I should eat completely on intuition and hunger and satiety. I need to say, no, I need to eat on intuition, on hunger and satiety, and within healthy guardrails. I have to keep my lizard brain on a leash. I have to keep myself on a leash so I can enjoy the journey, so I can be happy and safe, so that food and all of these dangerous things that have hurt me in the past can't get me. And who puts me on a leash? I put me on a leash. It's like adult Kristen and little happy puppy dog Kristen. The leash has to exist. So what does this mean for me in practice? This is what I feel like is the application for this. So you might find some help here. For me, what does a leash keep me safe from? Number one for me, overeating. I need a leash on my portions. I love to eat. and I don't always stop when I'm full. I try really hard to eat only when I'm hungry and stop when I'm satisfied. But there are times I make breakfast, I sit down with Roy, I finish my food, I eat kind of fast, and I'm perfectly satisfied. But he has some bacon on his plate, and it looks pretty good. And I could fit that bacon in my stomach, but it's not my bacon, and I already ate my food. And so I have to learn to say, all right, if it's not on my plate, it's not my food. Or I have one piece of bacon off of Roy's plate a day. Bottom line, I have to have a leash on my portions. So the tools I use, the leashes I use for my portions, I eat off a small plate. I never pull a full giant dinner plate out of my cupboard and put my food on it. I don't. If I use that size plate, I will fill that plate and I will invariably eat that plate, even if I'm full. I have never consistently, for any significant period of time, been able to stop and leave a lot of food on my plate when I'm full. So instead of saying, I've got to continue to work on that, it's so hard, how about if I just use a small plate, make it easy on myself? I can always get up and get more if I'm hungry, but small plate means I stop when I'm full to assess before I get more food, or ideally, I'm done. So I have to have a leash on my portions. The end. That is not restrictive. That is not obsessive. All of these people who say, oh, you shouldn't have to do that. You can do what you wish. But that keeps me safe. And I teach that to all of my clients. Have a leash on your portions. Put a number on it. Get a small plate. Never eat directly out of a package. So important. Number two, mindless eating. I have to have a leash keeping me safe from mindless eating because I love to eat as entertainment. I spent 25 years of my life eating for fun, eating in bed, eating when I was bored, eating in front of the TV, eating at the movie theater, eating in the car. I ate all the time. And there's still something so wonderfully soothing in my nervous system to sit and just put food in my mouth without having to stop and count it or pay attention. So I need a leash on the setting in which I eat. When I sit down at the table to eat, I'm not mindlessly eating. I'm eating. But if I sit down in my office, I'm going to be eating while I work. I'm going to be mindlessly eating. I'm going to eat in the car. I'm going to be mindlessly eating. If I'm watching TV, mindless eating. So I have rules on my setting. I have a leash on the setting in which I eat. I don't get to eat in bed unless it's a protein shake. I don't get to eat while watching TV. I don't get to eat here in my office. That's it. Bottom line. That's a leash. Those are hard and fast rules. They keep me safe from those old behaviors that feel so good on my nervous system. No, I want to happily bop around in my life. And that leash keeps me happily bopping around in my life. That little dog image is so strong in my head. It's like, I want to be that little dog. Leashed with slack in the leash, not pulling and tugging, not arguing, but just saying, nope, this is here to keep me safe. And I get to boop-a-doop-a-doo. I trust my owner. I trust the leash that's on my neck, right? We got to trust ourselves to put good rules. I used to say, oh, I gotta trust myself in front of the Doritos. No, I trust myself when there's a leash between me and the Doritos. Okay, number three. One of my other issues is dehydration. I love coffee. Coffee is my favorite. So I have to have a leash on my water intake. I have to have rules around water intake. I must have water before coffee. I cannot sit down in the morning and start drinking coffee until I have had a significant amount of water. Usually I make myself drink 24 ounces before I have my coffee. I also have to hit a daily water goal. I must hydrate, not just because it's good for me, but because I love coffee and coffee dehydrates me. If I'm going to have coffee, I must have the water. I must have more water than most people have. That is important. If I don't do that, I don't feel good. I get headaches. My body doesn't function well. And I'm hurting my kidneys. I'm hurting my liver function. It's bad for me. So I have to have a leash on my water intake. It's super important. And then overeating, again, I have to have a leash on my daily totals. Because when I go only on hunger and satiety, a couple of days in a row, I'll end up not eating a lot because I'm not super hungry. But then when that catches up to me and I'm super hungry, that old issue of I'm starving and I can't control myself and stop when I'm full kicks in. And so I've tested this 100 million times. And eating with hunger and satiety is rule number one for me. But I still must have a limit. I have to put a cap on it. And part of the value of the leash is I have to be smart about what is that calorie goal. right now, a marathon training. If I run for 4 hours, like I'm going to on Wednesday, I can't say my calorie limit is 1600. I need more fuel. So that leash is me as a responsible person putting a number on it that is reasonable, that's going to feed me, but that is not going to let me say, you can go have two pizzas and a bag of Doritos and a giant, you know, bowl of ice cream because you ran. Because that's what I would do. That's what old Kristen would do. And I want to protect myself from that old mindset that hit, that's ruined many, many experiences after I've had long runs where I've way overeaten all of those calories. So I have to have a calorie cap. I'm active. I can eat a lot. I can justify it in this lizard brain. I love really highly caloric red meat and fat. So I have to have a calorie goal. So I have to stay within my calorie goal on the every single day when I set it. And I have one day a week, I get to have a bigger calorie bucket. And when I'm doing these runs, I modify for that. Those are the leashes for me that keep me safe from the things that have sent me into the weeds before, that have gotten me hurt before, that have sent me into unhealthy places. I think it's important to think about, what do I need to be kept safe from? And to put those boundaries in place. A leash is not punitive, it's freedom. That little dog today was free to have a wonderful experience, but safe from the things that would steal or threaten that safety of that little dog. That is the goal. That's the reason for food rules, for parameters. What kind of leash do you need? What kind of guardrails do you need? It is not restrictive and obsessive and unhealthy to know that, to create those and do everything that you can to stay within those healthy boundaries. Healthy boundaries for your diet and nutrition and lifestyle. It's so important. And if you choose to look at it that way, you're going to have a good experience with it. Now, there are dogs out there on the leash and they're pulling and pulling and pulling and they're dragging their owners and it's a fight the whole time. They want something that is not good for them. They just want to run free and have this wonderful experience. And I get phone calls from people who say, I just want to eat whatever I want, but I want to just be able to not think about it. Can you help me? No, I cannot. No, I cannot. That is irresponsible for me to say, yeah, you can lose weight and not, you just run fancy free. What? Of course not. Nobody out on this boardwalk, anybody who lives here would never let their dog run free on this boardwalk and expect that that dog would be okay. It's too dangerous. You're not going to get that dog safely out for a walk and back in your home. And you cannot expect that you can just run around in this world willy-nilly eating whatever you want, whenever you want, and get what you want. I don't care if it appears that Susie down the street has an amazing metabolism, doesn't have to work out, eats whatever she wants, and she looks like Heidi Klum. I don't care if that person exists in your world. Is that your experience? If it's not, then what happens to neighbor Susie has nothing to do with you. I've had so many conversations with, I don't understand. My friend, she drinks that all the time. She drinks every weekend and she eats whatever and she's an amazing figure. It's not fair. It isn't fair. What are you going to do about that? What does that have to do with you? Nothing. What do you need to do to feel good in your skin? What do you need to do to make sure your body functions well? That's the only thing that matters to you. And since I'm your trainer, to me. So think about, where do you need leash? Where do you need boundaries? What are those non-negotiables? And this is my ultimate goal for myself this year. I want to stay off the battlefield. I don't fight this war anymore. I want to say, here are the places I need boundaries. Here are my boundaries. I am going to assess these regularly. I'm going to stay unemotional about it. I'm going to do what I need to do, and I'm going to enjoy a happy, risk-free trip to my end of my life, moving happily and freely in a body that I love. And that's it. I'm not going to sit here and go, well, how can I figure out a way to have donuts in my life and still reach my goals? I'm over it. I fought that battle. I don't eat donuts. The end. This is just over. I don't want to talk about it. I don't want to think about it. I don't want to fight over it. When I see a donut, I want to be like, yeah, there's a donut. It's pretty. I'm sure it tastes delicious. Do I want to fight that donut? No, I do not. I'm walking away from the donut. I don't need the donut. I don't need to talk about the donut. I don't need to decide. I don't need to make a decision. I don't need to take energy right now to make a decision that I've already made before I got in front of the donut. How many times? I can't tell you how much mental energy I waste in my life rethinking things. this weekend. I had my weekend planned. Saturday morning, I got up. I had planned to go to a retreat. I had so much resistance. I didn't want to go. I was exhausted. Roy had been gone all week. I wanted to spend time with him, but I'd committed to it and I'd paid for it. And I cleared the day and I was like, I cleared the day and I'm off work and I'm going to go to a retreat. Oh man, I wish I could spend my day doing something else. And I thought, wonder if I should go. I wonder if this is smart. Maybe I shouldn't be doing this. And I spent all morning in decision. Maybe I shouldn't go. Maybe I should just let, you know, my friend Mandy was, maybe she would understand if I'm like, you know what? It's too much. And I thought, what are you doing? The decision is made. It's on your calendar. You paid for it. You're going to the thing. Why are you making a decision now that you've already made? I wasted hours trying to make a decision I'd already made. So I set it down. I got in the car. I went to the thing. It was amazing. I needed it so bad. Reminder, if you have a lot of resistance in your soul over something, it might be because it's exactly what you need. So anyway, bottom line is, if you've already realized, you know what? I can't have popcorn in my house because I eat all of it. When you see popcorn in the grocery store, what do you need to do? Nothing. You've already decided popcorn doesn't come home with you. It's done. Leave the battlefield. Don't go on the battlefield and fight the popcorn. You've already beaten the popcorn. To say popcorn doesn't come in my house, therefore it can't end up in my belly mindlessly. Don't go back and make these decisions into another battle. Use your energy for something else. I have done so much spinning. I've done so much spinning on my diet. I've done so much spinning on like, what's my food rule, blah, 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 blah. I finally feel like in my life, since I got out of bodybuilding, this past year was a year of healing from all of that. And I've had to just come to terms with there are certain rules and frameworks that keep me safe. And I'm grateful for them. And I'm going to picture those leashes as sparkly little pink, beautiful, jewelry leashes that keep me safe. And I've chosen them and I love them and I'm grateful for them. And I'm going to enjoy living in freedom from all of the dangers of my old patterns, my old ways of eating and viewing food, and just enjoy the peace of living within the guardrails with that beautiful leash on. Try this out. It's a great way for you to suss out where you need to have this structure. And then if there's not an issue, if you're not at risk from something, you don't need a guardrail around it. Don't, you know, build a fence around something that is not an issue. That's important too. Some people tell you, oh, you need to control, you know, this, that, and the other. Well, maybe it's not an issue for you. Maybe you don't need to have a smaller plate. Maybe you have no problem stopping eating when you're full. But you might have your own. We all have our own, actually, not might. We all have our own places where we need some protection. So I'm beating the dead horse. That little dog was so cute, you guys. I need to teach Gus a few things because when Gus is on his leash, he pulls the whole time. He is not happy to be on a leash. He is like, screw you. I know better. Hence why he really can never be on a leash. Anyway, if you have any fun and awesome leash rules, guardrails that you come up with after listening to this and contemplating, please talk to me. I love hearing from you. I love getting your messages. You can message me, Kristen, at thekristenexperience.com. Send me an Instagram message. Let me know. I love to hear back from all of you. Thanks for tuning in to the podcast. I'm so excited you're here. If you want to interact with me, go ahead and send me an email, Kristen at kristensmithonline.com. Follow me on Instagram, The Kristen Experience, and make sure you share this podcast with a friend. That's all I have for you today. Have an awesome week. We'll see you next time here on Destination Begin.